You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Happy birthday, Hugh Janus. I've heard you're a massive fan.
So hello and welcome again to Rock and Roll, joined as usual by Ryan Worley. How are you doing, Wall?
Yeah, good. Just enjoying a week off. Last day of my week off tomorrow. So yeah, just chilling.
Can't fault it. And joining us this week, you might know him as Sparkles. We know him as Gatto. Gareth Owen is here. Gareth, what's the story, man? Why are you Sparkles?
Oh, right. Okay. I didn't realise I hadn't changed my username. Right, I go to a football dinner every year with friends in Manchester and all around the place. And when I was on a local football board, like 606 message board, my username was Sparky's Kneecap, which was in reference to Mark Hughes, Sparky.
Yeah.
And one of the people just decided to call me Sparkles instead of Sparky. And it just stuck, so.
Wally was concerned that when someone was logging in, that Sparkles was logging in. I don't know if he thought he'd be racked or if he thought his luck was in and he'd landed on the wrong site.
Yeah.
But
fingers crossed.
Yeah,
and I go on a Zoom meet them every week. And then I just obviously, I do it as a bit of a jest. And I put my username as Sparkles, but obviously I forgot to change it back.
So, we'll kick off quite a bit of news this week. And we'll kick off with the big one first, the big news stories of the week. And that's apparently people are preferring mashed potatoes to roast potatoes on Sunday dinners now. I don't know how we feel about this. And then 3%, like in baked beans. This is something I can't get on board with.
But baked beans, 100% no. My sister has been, when she cooks dinners for us, I've gone down to this and she've had mashed potatoes on dinners for a long, long time. So I'm used to that, but I'd rather roast with it as well.
Like, go have a roast potato. Yeah. I'm with you. I don't mind a bit of mash on a dinner, but you've got to be throwing roasties in there.
Oh, 100%.
This is the one thing. Wally's looking confused. This is the one thing that's wound me up this week. All the news that's happening, I don't care about. We can move on from Lions coaches and Rainbow Cups.
So as someone who a fantastic cook, I have mashed potato on my roast dinners every weekend because I put it in the microwave and I'm lazy as fuck.
You put it in the microwave?
Yeah, micro mash from like supermarket. Fucking 2 minutes is done, mate.
Whoa. You've managed to lower the tone further, yeah? Microwavable mash, like smash. Well, even smash. At least use a kettle with that.
It's like actual mashed potato that you just chuck in the microwave.
So which part of mashing potatoes are you not capable? You're boiling a potato and twatting the shit out of it and that's beyond your level?
No, it's just I'm lazy as fuck. So
this is unbelievable. I knew you'd bring something to the table.
However, if given the choice, I all day long choose roast potatoes.
Hang on, we've moved on now. Because my rant was going to be as well, that people who think Yorkshire pudding should only go with beef and that fucking mint doesn't belong on every Sunday dinner. But now,
the people that think that
microwavable mash, you've plumbed new fucking death, my friend. This is,
did you not know you can buy microwavable mash? I tell you what's
I didn't know that was a thing.
I tell you what's even better is, I don't know if all supermarkets do this, but the one I go to begins with M, ends in Orison's. they have a microwavable mash that's already has cabbage in it. And it's really nice. Really nice.
Just make some fucking mash. I can't think of much easier to make than mash.
It's easy, but why? Why have... I don't know. Just don't.
You're so under pressure, you've turned into fucking Fat Boy Slim. What?
I seen one the other day, which is even new levels of laziness, even beyond Wally's microwave. You can actually get a plastic tub, like a pot noodle, you just literally pour a kettle in the mash and stir it for 30 seconds and the mash is done.
That's just take the piss. That's smashing it.
That's smashing it, yeah. That's the old smash style.
Smash is fucking disgusting.
But microwavable mash is fucking right on the table.
Yep.
Anyway, we should probably talk about some rugby, shouldn't we?
Probably, yeah.
I'm fucking shocked. This is why, this is the kind of shit on my negativity on Twitter. It's this kind of bollocks that I'm having to tweet about. So, last week, or maybe it was a week before, because we skipped one, Rugby Kickoff done some analysis of people's tweets, their last 100 tweets. And to be fair, it did say that it was the more positive ones, but of the positive ones, we're very close, or I'm very close to the most negative rugby account on Twitter. So I think there were 70-odd accounts on his list. There were 17 people below me, surprisingly, including Cammy Black and Squidge, who, knowing Cammy Black and Squidge, really happy, nice people, generally outgoing, generally quite positive, I think. I mean, Cammy can remain quite positive despite being a Scotland fan. So, but yeah, we're quite a way down that list. Wall, you've got to sit opposite me, opposite the laptop every week and talk to me. I was surprised that I'm quite far down the negatives.
Well, you're not far. I wouldn't say you're down the negatives. You're near, like you said, you're near the lower end of the more positive ones, aren't you?
I'm the bottom of the top.
Yeah. I would like to think that a lot of the reason why you are where you are is a positive thing because of the pod. And I'd like to think the reason why you've gone up as to where you are is because you've got me on here with you and not just by yourself.
Well, what I did think was, if I'm that far down, given the past 12 months I've been the only optimistic Welsh person, how far down would I have dropped if I had been as negative as every other fucker about how Wales were going to perform in the Six Nations?
Are you beating Robert Rees? That's all you need to know.
I don't know if Rob was on there. I didn't notice Rob on the list.
The battle of the alliterative rugby Twitter accounts.
That's fucking easy for you to say.
Yeah.
Right bunch of R's.
Yeah.
I would say top three were Michael Liner, Dougie Vipond, and Catherine Spencer. They're the most positive accounts on Twitter, which is no surprise that what I was happy with is the three positive accounts, but not annoyingly positive people. Again, this is why I'm far down the negative list. There's nothing worse than an annoyingly positive person. You know, that person who's always positive and makes them an absolute arsehole.
Yes.
None of them three are that. So I'm quite happy with that. So yeah, I thought it was really good of Rugby Kickoff, something a bit different. If you look at a rugby analysis, I thought that made me laugh. And I know a few of us had a talk about it and where we were and comparing. And I'm coming for that title. I want bottom. I want dead last.
You want to
be the most negative rugby account on Twitter.
Not far off, mate.
So, the big news today. Lions coaches have been announced. Well, we're lifting the ban. We're lifting the drawbridge slowly. Or lowering the drawbridge slowly, that you're going to allow you to talk about Lions for a little bit.
Yeah, it's got to be done, mate.
Fucking itching to talk about them for 3 years, and we've only done a podcast for one.
It's obviously, as in the world of most sports or most sort of celebrity world, I suppose, now it was leaked yesterday, I suppose, that we knew exactly what it was going to be, even though the official announcement was 9:30 today. So, when it comes down to it, it's not really a surprise of who the team is. When you consider the likes of, obviously, Farrell, it sounds like, is obviously requested not to go. Same with Borthwick, I believe, and Rowntree. But I'm actually quite happy with the makeup of it. Obviously, you've got McBride and Jenkins have worked with Gatland before. No doubt there's been conversations with Gatland with Tandy previously when he was at Ospreys as well. And then, obviously, you've got Gregor Townsend, who was it 24 years ago, I think, was a Lions player on the South Africa tour in 97. Now going as a coach. Probably could have and should have gone 4 years ago. But obviously, he just got into the Scotland job, so I wanted to prioritise that. But I think all round, that's backroom staff has got a great mix and a great blend, especially when you look at the fact of Tandy and Townsend coming together and how well Scotland to play both in attack and defensively in the last year or so.
What about you, Gat? You happy with our Lions coaching setup?
Yeah, definitely. It is like tried and tested, isn't it? And then, I mean, you can't get better kicking coach than Jenkins, really, can you? You know, with his international record, and he's gone on 4 tours as a coach before. Or is it his fourth now? I think, is it?
It's his 6th tour in total that he'll go on in both. Yeah.
And obviously McBride was around back in the Gatland days, so he's got somebody that he can rely on there. And I really like Tandy. Yeah, I'm happy with that setup, to be honest. So
Tandy's got to be the one that no one would have predicted like 4 years ago.
Yeah.
Like Tandy, when he was at the Ospreys, you wouldn't have said, well, that's a guy who's going to be on the next Lions tour. But he's done fantastic work to redeem himself. And like, obviously, it wasn't a great time to be an Ospreys coach anyway. And we've seen coaches come in and try and do the job and fail since he's left. And it's only now they're starting to turn that around sort of on and off the pitch. But you wouldn't have said, there were laughters when he sort of got linked with Australia and going down and coaching in the Super League, and then did a fantastic job, did well there, moves up, he's doing it for Scotland. He looks fantastic at the moment. Like, we talk about redemption stories. I don't think he was as bad as people made out ever at the Ospreys anyway. And I mean, everything fucking worked against him as well. I don't think there's ever been a regional coach before that's had to lose their first choice hooker because he's been bitten by a fucking lion. Like, I think he was... Yeah. So sometimes it's just like the gods are against you. So fair play to him to come back in a way he has and be included and rightfully included on this tour. Like, I don't think anyone could argue and say, oh, well, you know, he shouldn't be there. So absolutely brilliant. You did say you were quite happy with the mix. It's been quite a good mix of coaches. I will say, like, if they ever do a Lions coaches, guess who? It's going to be the hardest fucking ball game ever invented. It's a thousand times
our the picture we had in the WhatsApp group, yeah.
Do they have hair? No.
Yeah, is Ross Kemp, exactly. Ross Kemp next online now? Is he? Or...
Yeah, is he male? Is he white? Is he bald? Like, that's it's going to be 1,000 times harder than that mastermind game with the coloured pegs and the Vietnamese woman on a box. It's like, it's the hardest fucking board game ever invented. We've got a quiz coming up later, so you will need your phones for it. But yeah, there's a quiz coming up later on.
Okay.
On a similar theme.
Oh, okay.
You said as well, Paul, you're really happy. I guess they're a little bit biased as well because it's very heavily Welsh and Scottish vibes. So I think it's a little bit easier for us. And I'm not saying that it's wrong at all because they are other coaches available, like among the best coaches there. But as a Welshman, you've got to be quite happy with the way the nationalities have fallen. If I was a Welsh or Scottish player now, I'd be thinking, I'll take that.
Yeah, I agree. And then use that on the flip side, because hopefully this is where you tee me up to something that I'm always talking about. But like, on the flip side, a lot of English players, one in particular, might be worried that he may not be going on tour. He could not be going on tour because his dad's not there, maybe. I'm not saying, obviously, that's the only reason he would have got picked, but it would have been a massive... Let's just say...
George Ford and Mike, yeah?
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
I was just going to say the same thing. I didn't know George Ford's dad was a coach.
But no, I just think that now, the way that the coaching team is set up, that conversation doesn't have to be had. So it's probably works in... I'd probably say the squad's favour as well. That if he gets picked on merit, brilliant. pick him. But if it's down to 50-50 and his dad's not in the room, there's a chance he's not getting picked. And yeah. I genuinely think it could be down to a 50-50 between him and Russell, or he'd go as like a third 10 or another centre option. So I think having Gregor there, having Steve Tandy there, and not having an English coach there, or having Andy Farrell there, could mean that Baby Faz doesn't go.
Well, that's what I say. We talked about this before, and I said, like, I don't think Farrell is the kind of person who would say, well, he's my son and I want him there anyway. I don't think he's that man and that coach. I think if he's not in the talk, in the running for the 10 or the 12 jersey, then Andy would quite rightly call it that, well, he's not the choice, he's not coming. I don't think he would take him on a favour. It's always going to be a difficult one anyway. Gatland does like him. He's out of form at the moment. You've got to say that. Like that's very noticeable. Whether there are other 10s and 12s that are really putting their hand up and saying, well, I'm undroppable, is where the argument comes the other way. But we do then look at, as you said, it's got to be the case of me that if you're a Scottish, if you're an Irish or an English player now, on the back of, at best, a mediocre Six Nations, like Ireland started to come good towards the end, but looked absolutely awful. And in the autumn, I said, you know, they were harder to watch possibly than Wales because they were creating nothing. And Wales were difficult enough to fucking watch as a Welsh fan. But then watching Ireland as an escapism was just as bad. But if you're English or Irish, suddenly you've got to be a little bit worried, haven't you, Gat, that there's no one here fighting your corner on the back of a bad tournament?
Well, yeah, it's definitely, I would say definitely, yeah, because, I mean, looking at it purely from sort of a form perspective, you've got to say Biggar and Russell are the outstanding ones at the moment. And then Sexton, even though he's getting on a bit, he's 32 or whatever, he's I think he's going to push out people like Farrell and all that. But like you said, they've got no English backing in. Nobody to say, well, hang on, they've got this to the game. They've got this that they can bring. Because I'm with them every week. And yeah, it is a little bit of worry for the English people, English and Irish there, that they've got nobody who's with them players week in, week out, and actually knows different aspects of the game to what Gatland can pick up every so often, you know, because Gatland can't attend every game. And
yeah,
I think I'd add into that though slightly. I think it's lesser of an issue for Ireland. I think it's more without the Irish players. I'll be honest, the players that I think are likely to go are obvious candidates. So yeah, the likes of your Furlong, your Byrne, your Stander, your Healy, possibly Conor Murray. Your Robbie Henshaw, maybe Ringrose. Yeah. Whereas the English players that potentially could go now, I think are more of a 50-50 call. And there's no one that stands out that says he has to be on the plane. And that's where I think they're going to have a problem.
Well, I think sort of your one player going into this that you would have thought was a nailed on was a OJ. And then he's had, again, a best and average Six Nations. I'm a big fan of his. I've said before how much he's grown on me as a player and as a person. I think he'll probably end up going. I think he should at least be on the plane. I think what we know is Gatland will get that extra bit of the players. But what we also know of Gatland is he's not afraid to be brutal. Like, as Welsh fans, we knew it anyway. We've seen him drop Nugget when he's one cap away from his century. He's dropped players and discarded players when they've no longer been what he needs. So he's very much someone who, it's the business, it's not emotion, emotion doesn't get in the way. If you're an Irish fan, you'll know it very well. If you're Keith Wood, you're probably still fucking seething about it because he dropped O'Driscoll for that third test in Australia and absolutely got it bang on. Like, you can't argue when you look back at it, because at the time it was a bit like, shit, he's better have got this right. And he did, it was perfect. Like that third test against Australia, they weren't in the game. It's weird though, if you are one of those players now who you thought, well, I've got a 50-50 shot. We know that he likes to do it slightly democratically as well and look at it to his other coaches to come in with ideas on what they think and who they would pick. So, yeah, I think if I was English now, I'd be shitting my pants, to be honest.
Well, I don't know if you've seen what he's done, the interview he did today with BBC. He asked his coaches to name, because he said I don't know if it was a slip of the tongue or if it's, this is what he's going to stick to. He asked his coaches to name a 36-man squad, each of them. And he said of the five coaches that are there, each of them had probably the same 20, 21, 22. And then the rest differed slightly. But he said when you count the different names that they had in total, it was up to nearly 50 names between the five of them that they named as potential Lions sort of squad members. So obviously, hopefully, then that 22, 23 that's core are ones that you probably think, right, those guys are coming because those guys are, whether it's the best three hookers or whatever, whether he's gone, what's my preferred match day 23, that's it. And then it's all fitted in with the others. Brilliant. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. I think I had a little conversation, and Steph, you're probably privy to this morning. We sort of did a semi, what would our squad be if we were to pick it now? And I went with 38 before we got and said the 36, and I made obviously only six English players in there, but whether, and that was the lowest of the four countries as well. Whether that happens or not, obviously it's time will tell, but it's going to be difficult for everyone, I suppose, because even though we've got Welsh and Scottish coaches on the coaching squad, that doesn't mean that they're going to get picked. Like, if they don't deserve it, like the way Gatlin is, if they don't deserve to get picked, they won't get picked. And the one big call, which I think, flipping back to what you said about O'Driscoll, is maybe someone like John Davis. Like, Gatlin, under Gatlin with Wales, John Davis was first choice 13, and you knew when he was going to the Lions, he was going to start. Now, because of his injuries, wasn't massively in form, I would say, in the Six Nations, but did okay and was sort of managed that 12 position for us. Is that someone that's going to be sort of potentially a 50-50 call?
I think the thing that Foxy will have going in his favour is that he has shown now he has got that ability to play 12 or 13, which Gatland's obviously trusted with him before. He came through as a 12, we had this conversation, and we had a big argument, and I was proved to be right, that he can play 12 or 13. And I think that versatility, if they're going to boil this squad down and keep it as small as possible, then that's going to become very useful. If you're a centre who can only play 13 or can only play 12, it's going to make it more difficult. It, obviously, it's where it'll come in handy for players like George North. Like a year ago, I would have said North perhaps wouldn't be part of this Lions squad, given the Six Nations he's had. I think he comes back into contention, and then you go, and he can play left wing, right wing, outside centre now. So
yeah. I think that's the best thing that ever happened to the North, was to put in the centre, because it just completely transformed his game, you know. And it's just the way he carries up the ball, and for me he'd be a third in the Lions squad at the moment. But it's just that experience as well, you know.
I agree. Like I think the move to centre, which for years I rallied against, and I said it was a bad idea. I couldn't see it working, it's stupid. He can't defend, he can't do this, he can't do that, his hands are not great. And then actually, like, when he's been brilliant. He's been absolutely superb. What he found is actually, it suits his defensive style a lot more. It means that he can break the line like he was before. He looks great, and I think it's extended his career for a few more years as well. So it's been an absolute joy to watch. So yeah, we'll wait to see. I think what it does mean, surely, finally, we get quite a few Scotsmen back in the Lions setup, don't we, on the back of this?
And somebody probably key to Scotland's attack and defence as a potential bolter before the Six Nations, now probably is even more of a certain as Chris Harris. Probably, especially with Tandy there, because we had a podcast with Cammy before, and Cammy was the one who said to us about potentially Tandy being a Lions coach.
Yeah.
Because he said, obviously, coming in, he's got a short period of time. This is how you're working it, and has been able to do that with Scotland. If you've got someone in your back line potentially who knows that inside out, he's an option to sort of lead that for him in training as well, isn't he? So, like what Roberts would have done before with Gatlin and Sean Edwards for the Lions previously, when he was like the Wales defensive captain, I suppose. You've got someone like Chris Harris who knows that method inside out, if that's the way that they want to defend against South Africa.
Yeah, and if we're talking our friends in Scotland as well, Johnny McGinty's been a massive advocate of Chris Harris and what he brings and everything he does. And I think no one's really nailed down a starting centre position. So it's there for Harris. I a contender for player of the Six Nations for me, he's been that good. So, but we'll leave the Lions coaches there. We'll do a squad, because I know you'll be itching to announce your squad. So we'll do one soon.
Yeah.
We'll run through some potentials and who's on your plane and whatnot. But the man that you already brought up, Owen Farrell, he'll help his cause that he's now Sarri's captain. I mean, captain of a championship club. But do you think he'll help his cause?
Not really, because he's been named club captain, but Brad Barrett was club captain. And for the last year, Brad Barrett missed a lot of games. And when he played, Farrell was captain anyway. So I don't see how it's much difference. He captains England, and not greatly. So I don't see how it's really going to make any difference. Like, they announced it. It's like, I was half expecting the next tweet to simply say, do you know the water is wet? Because he's been doing it anyway. I don't get it.
Well, scientifically, water's not wet, I think, is one of the arguments. The thing that water comes into contact with becomes wet, but water itself. Anyway, I asked the question on Twitter, where's he going to put the armband? Is the only thing, because we've still got no evidence that he's actually got arms. No, someone suggested maybe, I think it was Rory, suggested he just gets one printed on his shoulder. I thought maybe he could emboss it. And then if he hits someone hard enough for that shoulder, he could just leave it in. If they emboss it backwards, just leave that little, just Bosch. Imagine if Bosch, fucking great. That's marketing 101.
A red card written all over it. Or maybe not, because of his charity work.
Well, that's it. Perhaps he could have the charity day. He could have the charity as the reminder. The donkey sanctuary or whatever it is that he gives money to every month. Just bang. Just leave an imprint of a donkey's face on your thing just to remind you to pay your direct debit. So one of the news for this week was going to be the Rainbow Cup. And the inevitable cancellation of the Rainbow Cup that's now no longer inevitable, because today South African rugby officials have come out and said, no, still on. We're still going ahead. Mm. Everything's hunky dory. So we don't know, basically. We don't know whether there is a Rainbow Cup. There's not a Rainbow Cup.
It's somewhere over the rainbow, isn't it?
Yeah. That's why they've called it the Rainbow Cup, because the closer we get to it, the further away it keeps being. So I think that was a great pick of a name.
And there's a leprechaun at the end with a pot of gold.
Probably in a fucking Leinster kit.
Yeah. I think the pot of gold was the 8 million that South African TV companies were going to commit to if it worked. I will say the most exciting thing to happen, because I was all for the Rainbow Cup. I'm a big fan. I think it'll be great. But the most exciting thing for me so far was the Sharks kit that they announced, because that was fucking beautiful. I don't know if anyone's seen that. I'm a sucker for a black kit anyway, but it was black with all the sponsors in orange. And it was beautiful. To the point of, I spent Thursday in work looking at converting rands to pounds to see how much it would cost me with shipping. It's still cheaper with shipping than if I bought a shirt year for almost any other club. Until, though, I don't know if the government lit me with some sort of fucking shipping tax or make up new taxes that they can make up, because they're twats like that. So I almost bought, I was this close to buying a Sharks kit this week.
By spending all day, you obviously mean during your lunch break, Steph, just in case your employer listens to this.
I said I was in work. I didn't say I spent all day. I said I was in work. I was very careful about my wording. Mm-hmm. And no one from my work is going to listen to this anyway. I'll make sure of that. fellow Rainbow Cup teams as well, then. Ospreys doing a little bit of work to strengthen their squad and whatever tournaments and competitions they may end up playing in next season. Osher not the latest one to be added. They're doing pretty well, aren't they, with their signings for next season? Of the Welsh regions, they've been the most active and best signings
at the moment. Yeah,
they're picking up players that you could argue would be probably there or thereabouts to be in first choice or knocking the door for the regions they were at, especially looking at somebody like is it Morgan, isn't it, Jack Morgan, the flanker they signed from Scarlets. Like, for me, he's been phenomenal this year, and is someone that potentially, obviously, if Wales have got any sort of tours coming up when the Lions are on, he's a potential Wales tourist, because the likes of Navidi, Tipperick, Falata, you'd expect to be with the Lions. But yeah, I think it's impressive for the Ospreys. Obviously, we all know they've got the world's best fly half and Stephen Myler there as well. So that's another positive for him. So,
well, Jack Morgan has gone from the Scarlets.
Yeah, Jack Morgan's going there. He's at the Ospreys next year. Him and Osh and Knott have left. I forget the name of the front row forward from the Blues who've gone down there. I think the Ospreys don't pay their scouts any travel expenses, I think, from the look of it, because they seem to be everyone's within driving distance within an hour. That's the only players they're looking at. I'm assuming that Tommy Francis signing, that was during the Autumn Cup, was it, when Wales were playing at Parker Scarlets, so that they could, they just nipped down here and had a chat with him instead. They're thinking of the fuel. If it had happened during the first lockdown when fuel prices went down, perhaps they would have looked at signing a few players from further afield. But for now, they're not crossing that bridge at all. They're sticking with fellow South Walians. They've already started to turn around, though. Like I talked to you about, like, they've improved a lot this season. They've built well. They've obviously got the investment from Asia that came in. They've got this CEO or COO or whatever he was that used to be at Man City down there now as well, working on things. It's looking a bit brighter, isn't it, for the Ospreys? I mean, it couldn't look any more dour than it did 12 to 18 months ago. But things are looking good for the Ospreys, dare I say.
Yeah.
Go on, Kat.
Well, I was going to say that, like, I think they were a bit of a victim of their own success. It kind of reminds me, with used football terms, that they were like the Real Madrid of Welsh rugby, if you know what I mean? They had all these Galacticos they brought in, spent a lot of money, tried to get all the stars of Welsh rugby, and it kind of just, in the long run, it affected them because they had to, you know, sell them on when they were making the profits, etc. And it put them in the doldrums for quite a bit. So it is, even though I'm, you know, a Scarlets fan, I wear my Scarlets badge on my sleeve, you know. I would like to see the Welsh regions get back up to, you know, every Welsh region competing. So it can only be good for the game in general, you know.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, completely. And you mentioned that Galacticos, and I know it is a thing that Ospreys fans have discussed in the past. And the Scarlets, Simon Mandry came out this week and spoke about the Scarlets' defeat against Sale and how having so many players come back from Welsh duty was a massive, and claiming that they were calling Welsh moves during the game. That's how effective they've been by being away. Is anybody buying that?
No. Can I just say, as a non-Scarlets fan, I was fucking fuming when he said that, because to me, That's making suggestions that the players that play for the Scarlets that have just come back from international rugby are fucking idiots and that they don't understand it and they couldn't work out because it's another fucking team in red that they weren't calling calls in with Denver Wales. That, like, if the first thing I do if I'm Ken Owens and I read that is I'm knocking on your fucking door, son, and I want an explanation face to face. And that's just Ken Owens. Like, no one fucks with Ken Owens. Like, you add into the fact that in that game Jake Ball was playing as well. Yeah, he didn't feature loads for Wales, but no one, even Anna Wynne-Jones, wants to fucking mess with Jake Ball. So why the fuck is this bloke coming out and basically turning around and saying, oh yeah, our players are thick as shit and they don't understand what they're doing? That's bollocks. And as somebody who's a fucking suit who probably hasn't played rugby, that's he's a fucking lucky guy that he's still alive, in my opinion. Do you know what I mean? Like, if I was one of those players, somebody like a Ken Owens, I'd be certainly fucking knocking on his door.
Yeah.
Well, I came up with a theory that I spoke about with you. I wonder if it's a little bit of a power play to use against the WRU. Obviously, a lot of the funding this year hasn't found its way to the regions, which is a little bit shady in some ways. Like, the funding that's come in comes from them taking part in competitions, and they've had their funding cut so massively this year. They've had to take out loans just to survive, which have obviously got to be paid back. And I think what it means is at some point in the future, they're going to have to renegotiate the payments that they get from the WRU for the time that they give up for these players. Now, I wonder if this is a little bit of a power play that when those negotiations happen, whether he says, but it's not just the time that they're away with Wales, we've got to look at the effect that the time away with Wales is having on our regions. Because when you went away and you had them for 2 months and you won a Six Nations Championship, when they came back to us, they were fucking rubbish because they couldn't stick to our way of playing because they're so built into this Welsh way. Now, I'm not buying...
There's a simple answer to that, isn't it?
What?
They're not ready. Don't play them.
But again...
So if they've come back from Wales and they're not transitioned enough back into the Scarlet's way of playing or the moves and calls and they're not ready, don't play them. If you sign a new player and they're not ready, you don't play them.
Well, I'm going to play devil's advocate on that point then. And I'll say to you, if you're then head of a region and the WRU was saying, if you don't play in Wales, you don't play for Wales, unless you've got 60 plus caps. And we've only got 4 regions here. And we're going to give a lot of money to one region, which is the Scarlets, to be fair. And we expect a large amount of that budget to be spent on bringing players back to Wales. Why would we bother?
Right,
if we can't play them for... 5 weeks, well, essentially 7 weeks, because if we can't play for 7 weeks during the Six Nations, we can't play them then in the autumn as well. And then you say, well, don't play them for a couple of weeks after until they're fully up to the speed of the level that they were at before.
What's the point?
So we'll have an extra 4 weeks on there.
No, why do I
want Welsh players?
No, but that's it. That's the whole point. Like, if I'm saying, if he's turning around and, like you're saying, in regards to them needing to obviously not knowing the calls and stuff. If you're a coach, you don't want to be not picking your best players because it's and the way that the calendar is set is they come back, they have a week off, and then it's Europe again. Like that's just the way it's always been, which is unfortunate. But
does that then buy into my theory that the reason he said this is because he's then saying we're losing them for more weeks than actually the games that you're talking about because we lose them for a week or 2 weeks or we don't have them at 100% because. They're still playing the Welsh way rather than the Scarlet's way. Now, I don't think it's right. I think it's bollocks. But I think that's my theory on why he said this, is I think he may be playing a little bit of a long-term plan. The fact of the matter, and we'll do, because we skipped a week of rugby, and I'm not going to get off easily with it because I've brought this up, so you're not going to get off easily with it as well. The fact of the matter is all the Welsh regions were fucking rubbish that weekend because the Brews came out of the traps looking like fucking the All Blacks, and then I don't know what the fuck they finished like, because to lose from the position they were in was absolutely horrific. It was terribly bad.
Twice. So to be 12 or 14 points up, to then be pegged back, to then score a drop goal in the 77th minute to be winning the game again, to then lose, fucking absolute bollocks.
And I know the Dragons didn't have as much players in the squad, but I think the Dragons were the only ones who actually gave a good showing in that weekend. They were very unlucky to lose, to be honest.
The Scarlets looked poor from...
Oh, they were dreadful, yeah.
From that first kickoff. They put nothing together. I'm not buying that it was moves like passes weren't going to hand. They looked rushed. And Sale just applied so much pressure. I think that's why we've seen the frustration of the Jake Ball hit. So the question's going to be as well, Jake Ball, do we think that was a red?
I'll get you first.
I don't think it was, no.
Ball?
No.
I don't think it was either, right?
I actually think it's a fucking great hit, and it's purely the fact of Faf so small. Like, I know that has to be factored in, and I know it has to be like...
Well, I don't think he connects with his head.
No, but I think it looks worse because of the height difference.
And it looks worse because he's got long hair, and that sounds ridiculous, but his hair sort of flicks back. Now, I think he connects with his shoulder. And people were saying, oh, it was an horrific hit because he could have damaged his knee. Yeah, well, yeah, but that's not a card for landing on top of a player and his leg spread. Like, that's never been a card. Like, that's just unfortunate. I don't know what you want to do. The ref said his hands are on the ball. I don't think it's contact with the head. I think he got it right. I think it's play on, personally. But I was just wondering, because there was quite a lot on Twitter and quite a lot of people calling it out. And I could, and I've watched it so many times that when I first watched it, I thought it was fine. Then I watched it again and I convinced myself it was a red. And I've watched it so many times since I thought it was a red. I'm now back to thinking it's just play on.
Yeah.
If anything, it was actually quite funny.
Well, obviously there's a little bit of beef between the two of them anyway.
Yeah.
And then at one point I thought Wyn Jones was trying to kill him because Wyn completely lost at one point and there's three players talking to him and trying to pull him away and he doesn't take his eyes off Faf for a second.
But the thing that, like, I'm glad you mentioned that because it's just reminding me of what I heard. So that was the first game that I'd ever heard Chris Ashton on comms. And obviously Jamie Lyle was there and Warby was there and it was like, it was fantastic. And Ashton on comms, while that was going on, actually made a comment saying he's spoken to Faf before. And the reason why Faf does it so much is because the players can't do anything. When it doesn't matter if he's a 7 foot forward, he can't knock me out because this is red card. There's so many cameras. As long as I don't do anything that would be classed as illegal, all the winding up I can crack on because they can't do nothing.
I can't remember who said that's what makes Faletau the hardest man in rugby, is because he gets sledged and he gets there and he does get hit. I mean, there are ways and means. If you want to hurt someone, there's ways and means of doing it legally.
Yeah.
As Jay Paul proved that you got to, but there's ways and means of hurting someone without stepping over that line into it's going to be a red card, whether that be sneaky or, you know, it's done out of view. So there's still ways of doing it. But yeah, you get that feeling with a lot of people. There's a lot of people who talk a lot and wind people up, and you think, yeah, he wouldn't have done that 20 years ago because it would have been filled in by now.
Yeah, exactly. No, I agree.
Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, I'll let you decide. But
he's playing the Richie McCaw International Rules of Rugby, I think. He's on the just on the cusp of legality, basically.
Well, I went because as long as Jake Ball didn't do something to the point of he got a large ban, it's essentially his last meaningful game for the Scarlets anyway.
Yeah.
So you got to think, nah, should he just hit him? just hit him.
Out with a bang, literally.
Yeah, just bam. And then, well, you're banned for 5 Pro 14 games. Nah, don't matter.
Yeah. So
I'm not coming back, mate.
Yeah. And the way we've seen it work now, it depends on who you've got as to whether they ban you for games or weeks. Or but it's so long till his next Western Force, he would be fine. As is now a weekly occurrence as well, hashtag Twitter values happened on the weekend and lots of journalists came in their pants. Chiseling Cole, he picked up some rubbish. Did we all see Chiseling pick up some rubbish? Yeah. I mean, if you wanted to pick up some rubbish, you could have picked up that game because it was fucking dross. But yeah, that was a thing.
Yeah, he picked up some rubbish and they were like, oh, it's great. And then they realised it's the beers that he was drinking with John Klein and your man friend. So
yeah, essentially some South Africans that included the most beautiful man in the world had some beers. Obviously when they finished their beers they dropped them on the floor and then they picked them back up like responsible adults, and apparently that proves that rugby's built different.
It's what rugby's built on, though. It's the rugby valley, isn't it?
It's the rugby valley. I mean, everyone quite quickly forgot that less than a fortnight ago, a female journalist talked about being assaulted and harassed at games and at press conferences and at media events. But that's been quickly forgotten because Cheslin Drunker can't drop the can, pick the can up. Always, a lot of these rugby, not always, but a lot of these rugby values seem to be based around beer. Like when we had
charm offensive then, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was it Finn Russell and Stuart Hogg had a beer together? It was
Finn Russell and Stuart Hogg had a beer together, but in the picture they've cropped out Johnny Gray and because he was there as well. So it went all massive. The fact, oh yeah, Finn and Hoggy have had a beer, it's all great. And then there's another angle you see that Richie Gray Johnny Gray is standing there, but yeah, from the actual picture they use, he's cut out.
But there was a lot of excitement about the fact that two people who were friends and who played rugby together had a beer together. And apparently that was hashtag rugby values as well.
Yeah.
That's just people. Like, it's like they've never met people before. Like that's the...
Some of these people who say these things probably have never met people before. They're probably still living in their mum's bedroom at the age of 56 sort of thing. And she cooks them she cooks some porridge for their breakfast every morning. And
I'd like to think that if next season Real play Juve in the Champions League, Gareth Bale and Aaron Ramsey will have a conversation at some point. Like, you, surely this happens. Yeah. Like, we know rugby's not a different sport when it comes to that. So it's quite nice that we brush all the shit that's happening under the carpet because Cheslin picked up his own can. And then I think that the last piece of news, I'm going to finish on something really upbeat and really good and a really good news story. Dwayne Peel is coming home. I say a really nice piece. Wall, you've got to be very happy to see that Dwayne Peel's come back to his region. And this is, it's a good news story, yeah?
For the people who are not privy to how we prep this podcast, this item is mentioned on the podcast list as Dwayne Peel being a fucking Judas. So yeah, that's my
to be
that's
fair,
my
he's not being a Judas. He's had no connection with, well, he's had no connection with Cardiff rugby's ever.
Like, he's a Carmarthen boy, man.
Yeah. And he has never, ever signed any contract with Cardiff Rugby, played for Cardiff Rugby, had any connections with Cardiff Rugby. He supposedly signed a contract with the Blues, but they don't exist from this year. So it's only right that he finds a new club.
I wonder whether, I had a couple of prep notes, obviously, and I wonder why the thing was mentioned about Peel being a Judas, because I know that didn't come from Steph. And I was thinking, now it all makes sense.
Yep.
Yeah.
Not at all bitter.
Trying to influence guests. I mean, I did say, obviously, they didn't get the memo about Cardiff Rugby being a global brand with great heritage and a massive history and known globally throughout the world, and it's the start of a new dawn. I'm guessing I didn't send that memo to Dwayne because he's back off to Scarlett's.
Apparently he's missed his fucking saucepans too much.
So it's fair to say you're not happy about it then, right?
No, because I was over the moon and overjoyed the fact that he was coming to us, because I think he's one of the best Welsh coaches currently in the game. And then he fucks off back to you lot. So I'm
very happy. I agree. I think he is one of the best, most exciting young coaches in Welsh rugby at the moment.
Yeah, I bet you are.
So, you know, because obviously Stephen Jones was, and he's gone up to international level. So it's been great to replace him with a coach of Peel's quality. Dad, how do you feel about Peel going back to the Scarlets?
Well, to be honest, as
an impartial Scarlets fan, how do you feel about it?
No, but to be honest, in all seriousness now, it is sort of, it's in the DNA of Scarlets. They've always been a club where they've bought in ex-players, they've bought in people who had an identity with the club. Do you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
And it's good to bring someone back who's got a connection with the club, who was a legend of the club, who was still a good coach and can carry that tradition forward. Like, I mean, Gareth Davis and Phil Davis and, you know, yeah, Steve Jones. Yeah. It's always been in the DNA of Scarlets to bring back ex-players and to carry on sort of...
Let's flip it on its head then.
Yeah.
Dwayne Peel's coming back to Scarlets under Glenn Delaney.
Yeah.
As a coach. Right. And then he gets offered the job that he's going to get at the Blues as a head coach instead. Are you happy then?
Well, obviously, I'm
delighted to see him making his progression. Obviously, for the Scarlets, we've developed him as a player and moved as we did with Stephen Jones.
I mean, like, without him actually being on the fucking training pitch to even do one session.
I don't think he'd do that.
I think it is more likely from some of the rumours that they're going round clinically that it may happen the other way. And that Dwayne may very quickly get a promotion. Because I think the writing's not quite on the wall for Delaney, but those conversations are happening at the moment. Certainly those mutterings are happening down west. So I think that we may see him lofted up into the hot seat a bit sooner than he expected.
Which I think probably could have happened at the Blues if he was there with Mulvihill, but the fact that Mulvihill's gone, obviously, that's now... Yeah. And obviously today, just before the pod, the Blues have announced, obviously, or Cardiff Rugby have announced, Dyer's obviously there for a long term, which is... It's quite like... It's, I have no issues with the fact it's Dyer, and it's more the fact that I was looking forward to how our attack was going to be next season with Peel there at the helm. Obviously, with Priestley coming in, with the tarty backs that we've got at the Blues as it is, I thought, obviously... getting that back line running next season with Ball, that would be something special, but obviously not.
Well, I think you played some good, because obviously it's looking like Sherratt's going to go back to the Blues, which is a great way of showing that it's a new break and a brand new club and a brand new venture by bringing all your old coaches back. But Sherratt's obviously been there before, and you've played good rugby under him before, and good attacking rugby, and obviously you ended up going up into the Welsh setup because of it. I think that's what possibly as well is another thing for Peel, is not just the fact that it's his club, his region, essentially. But obviously, like, the link between the Scarlets and the Welsh job seems to be a very quick progression at the minute. There's people who've come in there from Gareth Jennings and Pivac and Stephen Jones. And then obviously we've seen them go elsewhere as well, with Easterby coming in, given the head coach job, and quickly moved into the Ireland job. It seems to be a fast track to international. And obviously, if this link opens up as well, as is being talked about with the All Blacks, whereby players and coaches will be given the opportunity to learn by going down into whether it be the Mitre 10 or Super Rugby and meeting up with clubs and coaches there, and then the return being done, it's a fantastic opportunity. I think it is too good for him to turn down, regardless of your feelings towards sort of where your loyalties lie. I think that at the moment, like, that opportunity is there. As Blues are a little bit lost, is it fair to say?
Well, end of this season, they're extinct, aren't they, the Blues? So
yeah, can't get much more lost than that.
No, I know.
I do. You know, perhaps it's a good opportunity, really, for Diane to come in there at the time when you're not then go, right, now is a fresh start, and we do everything my way, because the old way wasn't working. And so I think from next season, he'll start to bed it in, and we know how successful he was the last time he was there. Whether the don't go back rule will apply is yet to be seen, but I do think it's a good opportunity for Dwayne Peel, and a great player who I loved for Scarlets and Wales. And so I hope he does a good, and obviously, like, I want him to do well because it's a Scarlets anyway, but on a personal level, I want to see him succeed. It'd be great for him. But yeah, I had to get a chance to have a little wind up of Wally as well. So I think, unless we've got anything else, that's about it for news, unless anything's dropped just now.
No, it's just obviously just mentioning the sad news of Massimo Cotita, who's obviously passing away in the last couple of days. So obviously former Scotland scrum coach, Italian, obviously prop as well. But yeah, obviously just condolences to his family and stuff, because obviously sad news for him passing away of COVID.
Yeah, sorry, I've missed. A brilliant player in his day, like, at a time when it's weird because Italy weren't involved in the Six Nations in sort of the largest part of his career, sort of through the 90s, but had a bit of a reputation as giant killers.
Mm.
And now they are involved.
Yeah.
And they've got a reputation of being walkovers. So it's a bit strange. And a lot of those Italian victories were based on either, you know, usually Dominguez kicking, and then a ferocious Italian pack that he was a linchpin in. So, a big figure, him and his brother, to be fair, big figures in putting Italy where they are today with regards to competing year in, year out with the bigger nations. I say maybe they've lost that giant killer's tag.
Mm.
I think maybe that comes from a little bit of teams being a bit more prepared as well, and teams taking them a bit more seriously, and obviously the age of professionalism sort of dawning out that sort of it came the generation after his. And obviously, they said his connection with Scotland as well. He went up there and he coached the forwards and did a good job. He's very well liked in rugby circles in Scotland by all accounts. And yeah, it's a sad loss. And yeah, it's never one that you want to read, especially so young.
No, agreed.
So, moving on to a quick roundup, a quick look at this weekend's games. And I say a quick look, because for me, I watched some French teams play this weekend, and it's the worst decision I've made in a long time, because the fucking games were absolutely horrific. I didn't get to see many games this weekend because I had other things on, was doing other things. And I really wished I'd avoided the French games that I watched.
Snap. I'm exactly the same. I watched that Clermont game, and I just, it was like a game of chess. It was ridiculous. It was just tap, 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 take a penalty, go back, take a penalty, go back. And it was just, Toulouse, even though it was always the 3 points, Toulouse did look in control. And to me, I think Toulouse are the favourites to win it because they just got that extra quality in the side, like DuPont, etc., you know. But, oh, it was just a boring game.
Well, if you had said at the start of the tournament, name me the most exciting teams, you would have gone Toulouse, Clermont, Bristol.
Yeah.
Obviously, the Bears are fallen by the wayside. So that was the game we thought, right, this is really going to set the tournament alight. We'll watch this. It's going to be fantastic. Everything's going to be great.
Yeah.
Absolute dog shit.
Not even the beginning of the tournament. Look at the previous week. Toulouse were fantastic against Munster. Claremont only won in the last minute against Wasps. And you just think, like, I didn't watch the games on Sunday. And I, rewinding back 7 days, I said to you, I wasn't going to watch anything over the weekend. And I ended up watching 4.5 games and none of them on Sunday. But from all I've read and what I've seen highlights of, obviously there wasn't any highlights from Sunday because it's fucking shit. No. There were two games of kicking. So,
and this is the thing, right? People will talk about the top 14 and get excited about the top 14. This is my experience of two French teams playing each other. And I know we get these little highlight reels and we get these clips on Twitter where Toulouse will go length of the field and someone will throw the ball between their legs and then someone will chuck it over their head and someone will, Cheslin Colby, will spin round four times, sidestep three people playing a 10 for some reason, unbeknownst to any fucker else, right? But every time I've actually sat down and watched a top 14 game, which isn't available to me at the moment, but, you know, it's been like that. And I think, like, that's the top 14 to me. Or the away team drops all their big players and gets fucking bludgeoned to death by whoever they're playing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was a difficult watch, to say the least, to the point of, you question, like, why am I still watching this? But I'm going to leave that one there because I've been very optimistic about rugby and I've enjoyed it. And for the first time in a long time, rugby's, I'd say, has been like joyous to watch. And so perhaps we just, that was the one game to bring us back to reality before we carry on. Because even watching Scarlets get tonked by fucking Sale, it was still, you could still take the Sale performance from it. Like, Sale played well. It wasn't a shit game. It was just shit to be a Scarlets fan.
Well, like, taking the positives from the games that I did watch on Saturday, I would say the one Champions Cup game or Challenge Cup game that I watched, and then half of the Exeter-Leinster game. Both those matches that I watched in the European competitions at the weekend were fantastic. Adding to that, the Bath and Irish game on Friday, that was a great game as well. So I think it was just the French teams that let us down at the weekend. I don't think it was necessarily across the board. Adding to that, obviously we can go on to it in a sec. But the other two games I watched at the weekend were the Women's Six Nations games as well. And although obviously they both look on paper as though they were absolute tune-ins for the two teams, they were both very enjoyable games to watch. Although I wasn't going to watch any games at the weekend, the 4.5 I did watch, I thoroughly enjoyed it, to be fair.
Well, I need to make better life choices, and we wouldn't dive into them in a second. Let's go into them now, because I've seen the highlights of the women's games. As someone who watched them all then, good watches, enjoyable?
Brilliant. I thought I'll go in order, but the Italy-England game, I've seen England play probably, watched them the week before. They played obviously against France in the last Six Nations. It was on BBC. So I probably watched England more than I've watched a lot of others and social media and stuff. And that Italy game, that first 25-30 minutes of that game on Saturday, is the closest I've seen anyone play against England. Like, Italy was so up for it. Their defence was fantastic. And the first 14 points that were scored by England were because Italy were attacking. They dropped the ball sort of inside England's half or on England's 10-metre line. And there's two tries that are scored because one, Emily Scarrett picks the ball up and just goes the length, basically. And then the next try, I think it was Meg Jones, picks the ball up, pretty much goes the length, gets tackled just before the line and then offloads it to Fleetwood. And obviously, she dives over. So it's 14-0. But at that point, England didn't have the ball. Italy were just all over them. And then it was as if, and this is one of my winners that I've got listed, so I'll use it now instead. But you watch that second half and you think, oh, England have got a great 15 here. and then you look at the England bench, and the England bench that came on in the second half included both Poppy and Brianlee Khalil, Hannah Miller-Mills, she came on as well in the second half. You had Zoe Harrison, who came on, Lark Davis, Anna Botterman, all people that are probably in most nations starters. And there was a period in that second half where England scored something like 3 or 4 tries on the bounce, sort of back to back. And it was funny because England score, and while the score happens, they make, I think it's a quadruple substitution. So they bring on 2 new props, a new second row, and they bring on Poppy Cleary at 8 instead of Sarah Hunter. The Italian fly half kicks off. The ball's caught. There's a tackle. The ball gets moved left. Brianlee Khalil carries, gets tackled, offloads to Hannah Miller-Mills, who makes more yards. The ball's then recycled and goes left. Poppy Khalil makes about 40, 50 yards on a burst, like Faletau-esque running down the touchline. Gets tackled, ball gets recycled. After a few phases, England score. Italian fly-off kicks off, and exactly the same thing happens. There was 3 or 4 occasions straight off the bat where they just did the same move, but Italy could not live with it because of how good those players are. And it was just like, it ended up being, the final score obviously was 67-3, but like if you watch the game, certainly 25, 30 minutes, and then probably the first 10 minutes of the second half, it's a much closer game than what it suggests. But when England empty the bench like they did, there was only going to be one winner, and obviously that was proven.
So I think the biggest problem, although the games are close, we're seeing the lack of funding going into the game from some nations.
Yeah.
And I think that's what now, I know World Rugby are talking about there'll be a whole new competition, and you know, it'll see more money going into there. But surely we need to see something at the tier below. We need to be seeing something at club level, regional level, provincial level, to help bring those players up. I know that's easier said than done in some respects. I mean, I don't think it's that difficult to put a bit more money in. What we need to ask the question of is how much money can we sustain?
Mm.
For me, it becomes a big thing of that money needs to go in for it to become bigger. So I think we've got to accept that starting off, we probably are going to lose money.
Yeah.
And this is where I've got a big issue of what I've been ranting on for I don't know how long at the moment, of the game being tucked away on the red button on iPlayer. Now, as it happens this week, iPlayer or normal telly, I couldn't do games this week. And that goes for, as I said, you know, men's games as well on the Saturday. I missed all the fucking men's games that happened as well. But this is where I've got the major issue of the game being tucked away on a red button when BBC have got rights away so they can show fucking Antique Road Trip or Flog It or a 1981 episode of Top of the Pops or whatever else they've showed over the past couple of weeks. Agatha Christie murder mystery. Mm. Like, it needs to be visible. First of all, for girls to watch that game and pick that up and say, well, okay, I can be that, I can do that. You've watched the men's Six Nations tournament with your family a few months before. You've seen Wales go on. And then you think, well, actually, I could become that. I can do that. And I can be out there playing the same as my brother can, my cousin can, my male friends. And it needs to be there. And then, obviously, by doing that as well, you're going to attract more companies and more sponsors. Because if you're looking to sustain a team and you're looking for sponsors, well, obviously, sponsors are going to be more likely to put money in if that's shown on BBC One or BBC Two at 3 o'clock on a Saturday than if it's tucked away on a red button for only people who know what's happening and want to go out of their way to watch it. And so I don't buy this, oh, well, it's on the red button so people can access it, is a bullshit for me, because I wouldn't end up watching half of the shit I watch if it wasn't just on my telly. I would love the opportunity for people to stumble across women's rugby and sit down and watch it and find out that it's actually good and this is a great level. So we need to find a way of bridging a gap to bring that funding up and give the... But what can happen then at club level? What do you think there's a possibility of the WRU maybe seeing if they could put a team into the English Premiership. I know we've kind of got a team in the English Premiership because I think half the Bristol Bears are Welsh anyway. But is there any way you could see that it would be sustainable at the moment?
I think we there needs to at least have the conversation. So when it comes to the Premier, it's the Premier 15s, isn't it? So it needs to have a conversation where can we make it as a 16th team? Is it a possibility that we can have a team in there, play cross-border sort of championship? Because let's face it, a lot of the teams that play in that Prem 15s anyway aren't realistically that far away from Wales, are they? It's not like there's not massive travel. Gloucester, Harbury, obviously, is just across the border. Bristol's just across the border. You've got, obviously, Harlequins, Wasp, and so on. We're going to be sort of London-based and stuff, but they're still only going to be a couple of hours on the bus, isn't it? Or like 2 hours on the train from Cardiff or whatever. So it's certainly something that's got to be considered because, like, going back to the game on Saturday, like, if you were to give medals for heart and stuff, like, that Wales 23... didn't stop once, like, and you can see on the interview with Sean Lillycrap after the game, like, she's just distraught because they've put everything into these two games. Like, there's literally like she was taken off the field like with 5 minutes to go, but played on for like 12 minutes injured because they'd made all their subs, and it just shows that like we have a little bit of insight into some of their sort of backgrounds and stuff, and what they're timetables are going to be like, and with work, and some of them are parents, etc. as well. Like, some of these girls are getting up at 8:30 to do, or 8 o'clock in the morning to do school runs, and not getting home until 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, and then I've got to do the same thing the next day.
I'm just going to say the same thing. There was one of the rugby followers I follow on Twitter that put a schedule up for one of the women players, and this is an elite level international player.
Yeah,
out of 14 hours of the day. Doing school runs, doing her own work, doing her own schedule, and that's just not acceptable as, you know, as an elite level performer, you know, whether they're professional or not.
Yeah.
If you're an international player, you shouldn't be having to deal, you should be put into a bubble, it should be a proper professional training plan put in, you know, that's just not acceptable, and you're never going to get the levels that you want to achieve if that's happening regularly, you know.
No, I agree.
Well, I brought up the point earlier with the WRU with how much money they're throwing at trying to bring players home, and how they'd say in the players, oh, you've got to be playing in Wales to play for Wales. But then for the women, that's not even really an option. Like, there's no even semi-professional club that you can go for and play and commit your time to. And then it shows the hypocrisy of it all when it came down to... when COVID hit and we were in the middle of a lockdown, and Jamie Roberts came back to play in Wales to play for the Dragons, and then we said, I'm going to commit some of my time to the NHS, and I'm going to become a doctor again. And everyone got so excited. Oh, it's unbelievable. It's incredible. This is what he's doing. He's there on the front line and he's giving his time as well as playing rugby. Yet how many of those women players are actually already working for the NHS? Because there's so many frontline staff that were working through that pandemic whilst also trying to train and didn't know what was happening with their games, didn't know when they'd be able to pick up a rugby ball again because they weren't afforded the same opportunities. It shows the way that the game is treated from one gender to another. It's a massive shame, and I think it's an old that we're going to have to be able to do at some point because we do need more people shedding light on the women's game. And next weekend, we'll give a good look and we'll look at these Six Nations and at what's happening at the moment and then where the game can go, because I think it's vitally important for the game that the women's game is brought up, you know, closer in parity to the men, even if it can't be brought up level for a while yet. Like, the parity, we need to close that gap between the two.
And there is an appetite as well, because as you know, we're all, there's local teams around with us, there's 3 or 4 local women's teams. There's people like we were in school with or around the same age or a little bit younger than me, obviously, who started playing for a local team. The appetite is there to play the game, and you know, and like, I know your listeners would have heard of somebody like the Derry Diamonds, but they're doing fantastic, you know. And
well, I obviously coaching mini rugby, and without girls playing the game, we wouldn't have had the team. We have more girls than boys playing for us. And we're trying to, and obviously, like the hubs that have been set up by the WRU, there's girls turning up in their draws to play. At the moment, what we're finding as well is the girls sort of drop off once contact comes in. Yeah. But that's always been because it's been girls and boys together up to a certain age, and then sort of girls have dropped off after a certain point. And this is where the hubs step in now and bring it in. For me, it's a little bit sad because, as I said, like my team has folded because we had to separate boys from girls, and so we had to do the inevitable for the last year and say, right, we need to let them sort of go where they need to go in order to be able to carry on. But the appetite is there.
Yeah.
If we could get the TV coverage and the audience was there,
yeah,
then maybe we'll see that the sponsorship is there and actually we can bring this up. And it's a very young sport, really, sort of women's rugby, up to a point where it's been banned in the past. I mean, they tried to claim that there was medical reasons that women couldn't play previously, and they've done all sorts to try and suppress sport in general for women, let's be honest. Sort of football was the same. There was no women's football team in Wales until even here. So it's still relatively young, and so it still needs that growth. But what we need is someone to give it a kick up the arse that it needs in putting it in places. Let's get, you know, giving it the coverage that it needs, whether that be on telly, whether that be through websites, whether that be through podcasts. It just needs a bit more coverage and to bring it up. So
yeah,
anyway, that's my rant. That's my rant.
Anigan hold the drink just as well or even better than some of the men's team.
Well, I think it pisses me off the idea that it's not as good a quality when for break down the gender, when in fact the reason that it's often not as good a quality is because they're not given the facilities, the time and the pay that men are given, which is what affords you to become a full-time professional and commit to your sport. So when you can spend 5 days a week training and do what you need to do, that's obviously a little bit easier than when you're trying to fit it in after you've just done a fucking 8-hour shift. So
it goes back to what we said a couple weeks ago, Steph, on our little chat where we were all talking about best inside centres in Britain at the minute, and we all said Emily Scarrett.
Emily Scarrett, yeah. She's got to be included here somewhere.
Yeah, it doesn't matter who you choose. She's the best in England at the minute, or Britain, should I say.
Well, I mean, there's players that we could be looking at for the Lions if we're allowed to... To move across. We leave this weekend's games there.
Yeah.
We're all fairly in agreement then about women's rugby. So based on tweets that came out a little while back, we're going to do things that perhaps not everyone will agree on. So what I wanted was unpopular opinions. The perfect name for a segment for this, as obviously already, as with everything good in rugby, being done by Squidge. So I think Coreal to die on was probably the best phrase to sum this up. But that was Squidge who invented that, so I can't take it. So we're just going to call it unpopular opinion. Just so because you know I love to shoehorn a rugby reference into anything that we do. So unpopular opinions, and we'll ask for some for next week. But this week I'm going to come to you. So, Wall, let's start off with your... I know you've got fucking loads.
I've got one.
Well, only one I want for this week, and you can bring one in future weeks.
I've only got one. So... And this is purely for on-the-field rugby styles, nothing to do with anything else off the pitch. I want to get this out of the way now.
Right, come on then.
I kind of like the playing styles of Leinster and Exeter, and the game of the weekend was very, very good.
Now, I will say Exeter don't get the credit they deserve for their playing style, because I would say that actually their backs are quite good and they throw the ball around quite a bit. And it's only in that last 20 that they do the old shove up the jumper and push over the line. But obviously, because people see highlights and they see the shortened game and they see clips, that's what they see most of. But actually, they're quite... I mean, you don't get players like Cordero playing, like Hogg playing, like as much as you think, like Slade playing.
Or someone like O'Flaherty, yeah.
Yeah, you don't get those players on your in your team without being able to play an attacking brand of rugby. So I think, the fucking Leinster, man. I've deliberately avoided that game because I probably had a push, could have watched it. I thought, I'm not having that as my one game this weekend. So I deliberately avoided it thinking I can't watch what's going to be the most boring game of rugby. And then it wasn't. I picked the most exciting game of rugby and that wasn't. What I'll do is these three unpopular opinions we'll put out to a Twitter poll as well and let people judge whether you're right or not. So similar to Laidlaw, but perhaps a little bit easier than that. Gad, what's your unpopular opinion?
Well, first of all, I might have a round name for you. You call it the Mike Brown round.
Right.
But this is technically, it's not unpopular to actual rugby fans, it's more to the general Welsh public. Wayne Barnes is a great referee, and he's not at least the slightest bit biased when he referees Wales games.
I'm going to agree with you, and I 100% agree that it is kind of an unpopular opinion. If you're looking at the overall Welsh public, my father hates him. Mm-hmm. My father hates him. I'd acknowledged a couple of weeks ago that he hates him because of something that happened like 6 years ago or something, and he still never got over. So I will accept it is perhaps an unpopular opinion in the grand scheme of it all. And yeah, you're right. He's a fantastic ref.
He just takes the time to explain things, and he knows the laws of the game, and you know he's very affable, and he just... All right, he can be a little nitpicky, but surely that's what a ref is there to do.
I'm going to throw in two caveats to the Wayne Barnes thing, though. The first one being the overexcitement of him being able to speak French.
Oh, yeah.
It does my head in. I don't think it's a... Some French players have already said, well, it doesn't help because it's sort of pidgin French, and so it's not as good if he just spoke English. There's been large periods of the game where he spoke then entirely French, which completely takes away the point of why he was speaking French to even things up. And then, third of all, a lot of what he says in French is advantage. And I think they could have differentiated the two, to be honest. Exactly. I don't think... What does advantage mean? I think they would have worked it out. The second thing is, as much as I like Wayne Barnes and as good a referee as he is, I love his wife so much more. Yeah. Polly's absolutely fantastic. Yeah. One of the best people on Twitter. So I've got loads of love for Polly. So I will agree with you as long as we add the caveat in that Wayne Barnes is an excellent ref and a great guy, but not as good as his wife.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Right, so we've all agreed on that one. So we'll put that one up. My unpopular opinion is that I think scrums are really fucking enjoyable. And I love watching them. So I know that people will fucking hate that one. But you can reset the scrum as many times as you like. People saying, oh, we should stop the clock. Bullshit, this is the best thing. Or maybe not the best thing, but one of the best things in the game. I love a good scrum. And you can't tell me you don't get excited if a team is dominant at the scrum, or when you're not expecting a team to compete at the scrum and suddenly they get parity and it's nice. And when it's perfectly level and no one moves anyway, that's joyous to me. So yeah. I know that there's a lot of hate for scrums. My unpopular opinion is I think they're incredible, enjoyable, and I love watching them.
So I would have argued this point a little bit before Saturday. But in Saturday's game, the Irish pack were absolutely dominant against the Welsh pack, and Wales got pushed off their ball like a lot of times during that game. But in the second half, there's one scrum that in particular happens where it's probably a lot more even, and Wales actually get given a penalty for it. And I think I screamed more then than I did when Doohan won Wales the Grand Slam in the France-Scotland game, because you could see that, yes, for the whole match, they've been utterly dominant, but for that 30 seconds or a minute, we got parity and dominated them for that one. And it was like, there's like a little bit of a glimmer at the end of the tunnel, I suppose. So yeah, I'm not going to argue with you. I would have potentially had things to come back on, but after Saturday, no, I agree.
Well, I'm an ex-prop, so I am going to agree, but I've got one caveat on this, and the art of hooking is gone. Is gone. Is the ball just go straight through the legs now? I mean, you go to play, like I was playing youth rugby, whatever, and you'd have, you know, a hooker would be taken off and taught you know, the art of the hook, the art of the catching the ball. And it's just, it's, you could bring up an old generation of players and who can hook. And some things like that, sometimes they just, I think, what's the point of the scrum when the ball just goes straight in and straight out the other side? But in general, yeah, I think I love the scrum. So
well, I've got to see that we're all in agreement then. But I do agree that maybe the hook thing, but I do think it's come back a little bit as well now that they've been made the hook and that sort of thing. I'm gonna throw him under the bus a little bit because it was a tweet that he put out and then hastily deleted. But I remember staying up to watch Brazil against the Maoris a couple of years ago, and it was like an early morning, well, like late night, early morning kickoff because it was in Brazil. And Brazil put in the best scrum I've ever seen. Won it against the Ed, against the All Blacks, and they against the Maoris, who went backpedaling. And Duncan Bell tweeted, "I'm moist" on the back of it. And it's the absolutely perfect tweet. And I wish he hadn't deleted it because it was great. It's one of the best tweets ever. And I agree. I was up at like, it must be like 3 o'clock in the morning. And so I'm really glad I made the decision to stay up for that scrum alone. So I love a scrum.
No, the one for me.
One quick thing, sorry, is you know, like years ago, you sort of get your stereotypical, the props are fat, the second rows are lanky bean poles, the sort of just before the days of professionalism. Scrums at least held years ago. You see someone collapse scrums now because they're all built like brick shit houses, right? And you know, they're going in at 90 miles an hour, and you see a lot more collapsed scrums now than you ever seen in the past. Mm. And that frustrates me a little bit. But in general, like I said, if I see somebody, especially the team you're supporting, if you know that they're dominating the scrum, I love it. Mm. I can't wait for the scrum to come along and think, oh yes, we can have them in the scrum. We're going to gain a penalty out of this. Are we going to gain yardage? Are we going to get a platform to build on? So in general, yeah, scrums are great, but sometimes the collapsing of the scrum really pisses me off.
And so playing into those stereotypes, I'm going to leave unpopular opinion there. I haven't got a jingle yet, so I can do this as one link. There will be jingles. There's jingles aplenty coming in the summer. And we'll move on to really quickly, because I've got about 10 minutes left of running through. I give you both a task. So this week was WrestleMania. So it was to pick your 15, your wrestling 15. We are going to have to run through them quick. So, Gat, go on, kick us off.
Right, so I've got prop as Bam Bam Bigelow, because he's a big guy, but he's mobile. Kevin Owens as hooker, Vader as Lou said. Second row, Omos, who's like 7 foot odd, and Giant Gonzalez, who's 8 foot, so you won't even have to jump in the line-out. Cesaro as flanker, basically just because he played a rugby character in wrestling once, so he's just in on that. Goldberg at number 8, and Sheamus at 7, open side. Rey Mysterio as my scrum half, because he's quite small and light and nippy. Shawn Michaels, because he's got a super kick at 10. Jeff Hardy on the wing. Edge and Roman Reigns as centres, because they can spear, tackle. Ricochet on the other wing. And Bret Hart as scrum half, because he's the excellence of execution.
Brilliant. Some of those, I say, I almost went for Kevin Owens based on the fact he looks like Hawker and his name is almost Ken Owens. Yeah. And Vader for my loose end because I thought, yeah, he's got that bit. And then he looks like he'd be good around the park because he was obviously more athletic than he ever looked. So he was made for prop. Go on then, Wall.
So I've got loose end Rikishi. He's a beast. Hawker, Triple H, because he's a sly old dog like most hookers are. Number 3, the Godfather, because we all know that props bring the party. Mm. We've got second rows, Kane and The Undertaker, the Brothers of Destruction. Mm. I've got JBL as 6, because he's an absolute brute. Edge at 7, because he loves a good spear tackle. The Rock at 8, size and ball carrying ability. 9, Rey Mysterio, short, fast and exciting. 10, Macho Man Randy Savage, because they all think they're macho.
Mm-hmm.
11, I've got Jeff Hardy, because he's high-flying tricks. Batista at 12, straight lines, hard-hitting. 13, Ultimate Warrior, they're all flamboyant. 14, Rowdy Roddy Piper, because unlike Gats, I'm not afraid to pick a Scotsman. Mm-hmm. And then 15, Shawn Michaels, switching music, confirms he's at least good at kicking. So I nicked that off Gats, because I already had it written on my phone.
I can't believe I forgot JBL, who actually played rugby and set up a rugby charity. So,
and he's a massive fan of rugby.
I wrote a massive article about once on the charity setup, and now he's anyway. So I've kind of based mine on stereotypes of positions. So I'll go through my forwards first, and I'll do my back second. So I've got Braun Strowman at 8, because you wouldn't want him peeling off a back of the scrum and trying to tackle him. Eddie Guerrero at 7, because he lies, he cheats, he steals, and that sounds like every open side I've ever seen. Triple H is at 6, because he's a proper hard man, slightly psychotic, strong as hell, nobody's favourite, despite clearly being the best one. And I almost went Chris Benoit, but there's obviously issues with picking him. I've gone Kane and Taker in the second row as well. The big, angry, scary, hard as fit as hell, but somehow slow. And the ability to keep going until death. So they made for the second row. Bam Bam Bigelow is my tight end. Fat lad. Never got the recognition for how technically good he was. That's the perfect tight end. Mankind at Hooker. So athletic enough to get by, mad enough to do it well. And he's already got that hooker inch as well, which is like part of the course if you're going to play hooker. Brock Lesnar, then, as my Lou said, because he's a big fucker. He's overly aggressive. He's strong as fuck. He never looks happy. That's every Lou said I've ever played with. Ultimate Warrior at 15, fast, slightly unhinged. Not technically good enough for 10. That's where he'd rather be, and tries to make up for it with enthusiasm. John Cena on the right wing. Should be the most exciting, but isn't, and is just annoying as hell. Edge at 13 for the same reason. That's be a tackle. That defense would be superb. So he's leading my defense out. Rock at 12, technically brilliant, fit as hell. Wouldn't want to defend against him on a crash ball. And I can't smell what he's cooking, but if it's a local rugby club, it's obviously going to be sausage and chips, because that's the fucking law. Rey Mysterio is my 11, because he's basically just chiseling Colby in a mask. Mr. Perfect is my 10, class, in control, never put a foot wrong. Overtly confident, and A, that's been spent a bit too much time on, absolutely nailed on for outside half. And then my 9, controversially, is Jimmy Mouth of the South Heart, because he was a little fucker who never stopped talking and never fought his own fights. So I think he's nailed on for scrum half in my team.
That reminds me of every scrum half I've ever spoken.
Every scrum half is Jimmy Hart. So yes. That's my wrestling 15. So moving on. To wrap it up, we'll do our winners and wankers for this week. We'll go wankers first, because I think it's been one of those ones where we've tried to finish on a positive note. So, come on, Wallace, have your wankers.
The two all French quarterfinals.
Yeah.
And anyone that finds the need to abuse someone else, whether that person has worked their bollocks off and have done more than that person, criticises them. So basically, if someone's going to be abusive, understand that the person you're abusing is better than you anyway, is more qualified to do the job that you're abusing them about, and simply don't fucking abuse them. It's just fucking shit.
Got your bankers this week?
Only one I've got, and that's the Tonga coach, Tutai Kefu, who was given the opportunity for that misogynistic, homophobic, God-fearing prick to come back into rugby union. So, yeah.
I've missed that. Has he really?
Yeah. He said that he believes that his beliefs are probably in line with a lot of people in the Tonga setup, which way to throw all your teammates under a bus as well.
Yeah,
I forgot about that one. Yeah, it's a really good shout. My wankers this week, I've also gone for French rugby, because that quarterfinal was absolutely horrific. And I've gone for the Scarlets, because their performance was a shambles, and then to come out using the excuse of they were using Wales as an excuse. And I love Simon, and I love the Scarlets. And so, as I said, I try to keep my tongue in cheek, and so it obviously will be, but Jesus Christ. But yeah, I think 100% Gatto's nailed it for Wanker of the Week. With your winners, Wall?
I've used a couple, because we've already talked about it, so I'm going to put Jalabé for having massive balls to kick that final winning penalty for Bordeaux. Sure, little crap for just her being just fucking immense,
just being
her, basically the female Alan Wynne Jones. But I'm going to finish on Baveen Parsons, the Ireland left wing. Personally, I'd never heard of her before, but she, for me, was like the female version of Doohan on Saturday. Every time she had the ball, it took like 6 or 7 players to bring her down, always looked dangerous. And if you were to, we were chatting about it earlier on, if you were to look at picking a Lions 15 for women at the minute. A lot of them would be English, but she has to be on one of the wings. So, yeah, definitely her.
Gad?
Right, well, I got to change mine slightly due to the sentiment of the wankers, because I did have French rugby teams as my winners. But I am going to go, even though they've actually lost heavily, I'm going to go the Wales women rugby team as winners, as in a moral victory of winners, because in the face of adversity, the 14-hour days they're doing, the lack of funding, the lack of everything, yeah, and they still got the heart to get on that pitch and play for their country and represent.
Brilliant. My winner for this week, the man who's found redemption, as I said earlier, Steve Tandy, is my winner on the back of having a difficult time with the Ospreys.
You're so lucky you just said those two words, Steve Tandy. I thought you were going to say Dwayne Peel and I was going to go.
Dwayne had nothing to redeem himself from. He's been nothing but quality player and coach. No, Steve Tandy for everything that he's done. Like I said, he kind of got outcast from Welsh rugby on the back of the Ospreys and dealing in an incredibly difficult time at the region then. And I mean, you could see how it went down with the players' reaction, especially in some press conferences on the back of it. And yeah, to come back in the way he has, to move from there to Super Rugby into international rugby, and now as a Lions coach, absolutely superb. So fair play to the guy, absolutely brilliant. It's great to see a Welsh coach do well always, but especially when they've had a difficult time like that. I've run out of time. I was going to do a quick quiz at the end. Mm. I realised that I'm... basically, I've put a quiz up on Twitter. So we've got a nice little game of Egg or Lions Coach, which is my new game show that I'm pitching to ITV this week. Mm. So I've literally, there's 10 pictures up there, the tops of either eggs or the heads of Lions coaches. Just have a guess which they are. So we would have done them tonight. I've run out of time. I've got to go. Wall, you're looking really confused. But if you go to my pinned tweet... You'll see a picture of Clive Woodward as an egg.
Yeah.
And then if you scroll...
Okay, yeah.
The eggs on the top of his heads. Just have a guess. Let me know which they are.
Yeah. That'll keep me...
If you want to go through them in order later on and send them to me, and then we'll decide whether they are indeed Lions coaches or eggs.
Awesome.
Brilliant. And I think that's where we leave. Gat. Thanks so much for coming on. It's been great. We told you we'd have you back on, having done the quiz one, so it's great to finally get you. And on a week as well, where Dwayne Peel returned home to the motherland.
Can I just have one request?
Yeah.
Can we have the title of this week's pod as Dwayne Peel is a fucking Judas?
No. Well, I'm not even going to thank you after that. Now to finish off, we're all just going to give a quick version of Amaro Heed, and then no, thank you both, boys. Thanks everyone for listening, and it's been rock and roll. Cheers. Sports Social Podcast Network.